We're going through the Old Testament, and as we get into the thicker and thicker stuff here, it's going to be more general, more general, more general. Because obviously, you go through the Old Testament, there's just absolutely tons of stuff that's about Jews and Israel. And a tremendous amount of prophecy in there and all that kind of prophecy and stuff in there. And who knows? I could go out and buy a bunch of books and find something that's really cool and put it all together into my version and then sell that one. But I'm not going to do that. But I do have something for this morning that is interesting that's out there and stuff in a second here. But we're just looking at, today, we're going to look at Solomon again, part two of Solomon here. What a thing. Here's a guy that had it all. I mean, truly had it all. And then he loses it all. Isn't that a shame? I mean, the guy just had it all. Yeah. And I mean, he even went beyond what we have it as all. Not only did he have everything, but it was given to him by God. I mean, it wasn't something that he had earned and worked hard to get. You know, it isn't something that Dad just handed to him on the platter, although a lot of it was. But still, he asked God for wisdom. And he even got the brain thing given to him from God. And yet, his life was still a shipwreck. I'm not sure what we all covered last week, but there is one thing I want to look at. I guess before we go on to our thing in Chronicles there, let's go to 1 Kings. 1 Kings this morning. Then we'll get back to Chronicles. 1 Kings chapter 10. Just off the side comment here that everybody wanted to go see Solomon and his wisdom and his temple and his riches and all this kind of stuff. And I think that you'll recognize this phrase. I'm not sure what song it's in. The half has not ever been told, or something like that. The half has not been told, some deal like that. Queen of Sheba said that in verse 7, 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 7, talking about the wisdom and all she had seen with Solomon. There is that phrase, the half was not told me. And that's true. I mean, that's, you know, that's quite a deal. But it's just interesting how we sing that. I remember what song it's in. The half has never been told. What song is that? Anybody know? I got the tune down. Anyway, and so we sing that. We're actually singing what Sheba says about, Queen of Sheba says about Solomon. Just an interesting observation. If we go to 1 Kings chapter 11, and if we were to read that this morning, which I don't think we'll do because I don't think we have the time. We'll see, I guess. But this is the chapter that really destroys him, and it's all about the ladies that he had. Verse 1, chapter 11, verse 1, 1 Kings. But King Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh. So there's already we got a problem. Women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Zidonians, and the Hittites. And he's already striking zero. Of the nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, you shall not go into them. So he goes right where he's not supposed to go. You know, son, I want you to have a good life, but I don't want you to da-da-da-da-da. And what do you think they're going to get? They're going to go for the one. It seems like they're going to go for the one that they shouldn't go for. Yeah, but Dad, she's cute. She's got a lot of money. Or whatever, you know. She goes to church, you know. Yeah, but what church does she go to? Well, but I'll help her later. And it says there in verse 2, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. So that's what happened. 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 2, that's 3. And he had 700 of those critters. They're strange women, and 300 concubines, and they turned away his heart. Oh, it just goes on. For it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wife turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, and was the heart of David, as was the heart of David his father. And it just goes on down here, and he just writes about all that stuff, and it's pretty interesting to see how that takes you down. I guess that would really explain how is it that Solomon could write Proverbs chapter 5, 6, and 7 so well. But that strange woman will destroy that guy. And the fact that it says that, look at Proverbs chapter 7. And knowing what we know about Paul and God's forgiveness and imputation thing, all that kind of stuff, this is still dangerous material, though. chapter 7, verse 27. I just, from what I've seen so far, nobody's written to me yet and said anything. I don't think Solomon ended up on the right side of God when he died. The last thing he says in 27, here's her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. So, you know, just whatever. Not that he wrote that at the time, but I mean, still, quite the deal. And 1 Kings 11, 26 to 43 is just, it's just where it's over. Look at verse 43. God even stirs up the enemy against him. Isn't that something? I mean, not only does Solomon go against God's ways and his heart and all that kind of stuff, and the ladies mess him up, and I think it's in verse 14. It talks about here, and the Lord stirred up an adversary, even brought him his enemy. And can you see why people say what they say today that are still Old Testament geared? You're living the kind of life you are. You're not coming to church enough, and you're not doing this enough. You're not reading enough, and you know, I mean, that's not a good thing. And it does cause you to get cold to God, da da da. There's all that kind of response. But this enemy that shows up in your life, God stirred up an adversary. If you understand Paul's teachings, that doesn't happen. You may allow an adversary to step up in front of you and all those things. That's probably just because you reap what you sow by who you're playing around with. So I'm just seeing more and more how there's so much Old Testament in today's Christianity. It's just an amazing thing. And I know, I heard it at the booth, well, we're Jews now. We're spiritual Jews now. So everything that's in there is written to us because now we're Jews. That's what they say. And that's just crazy, but we'll talk about that some other day. So, knowing what we know a little bit about the future of Israel that's coming after Solomon's stuff, they've got a rough time of it from here on out. I mean, this is when they were the greatest, most powerful country in the world, nation. I mean, these folks had it all. Abs, world wasn't as big as it is now, you know, as far as nations and stuff. But still, it was all there. It was all there. And our children, our kids, our teenagers don't realize, no matter what their situation is in their life, they've got all they need right there. I mean, it's all right there. And it's just totally up to them, parents, to step aside eventually. Totally up to them if they want to go out there and not have their heart towards their family and their brothers and sisters and moms and dads. Go out there and do their own thing. Leave God out of the whole picture. They can end up just like Solomon if they're not careful. Kath and I looked on the internet last night on the YouTube thing, and I found Captain 11, the wisdom of Solomon and the strength of Atlas. And there's all this stuff going by, and I thought, what a waste of a childhood. Nobody knows what that means, but I was going to try to record it, but I guess you can't record that stuff off the internet. I don't know how you can do that. But so you're up on the website. You want to find something which kind of shows you why in the way I am. Type in Captain 11. Well, let's go back to 1 Chronicles 28 now. So it's quite a thing. I mean, it's just an amazing thing about old Solomon. I will also say, not knowing what's coming up in the next couple of months of our Old Testament review, the stuff that we can deal with today is really probably about the best we've had yet as far as what's in here for us today, what we're going to talk about today. So let's just jump into this thing. He's going to build it. I'll see, 1 Chronicles chapter 28, 19. And this is quite a spectacular verse. We talked about this last week. All this, said David, the Lord made me understand in writing by his hand upon me. If we go back to Exodus 25, you notice that Moses had to build that tabernacle exactly the way God wanted it to be. Exactly. And he told it. But now David has it written down. And it had to be done. Now look at 1 Chronicles 22. And I think we're going to see why this morning this is so specifically had to be written down. 1 Chronicles 22, verse 5, says that this house that is to be builded for the Lord must be exceeding magnificent, of fame and of glory throughout all countries. So this is quite a place. If we were to, this is kind of a quick summary here, just kind of an interesting thing out of Haley's handbook, Bible Correcting Manual. If you have a Haley's handbook, please note that they do make corrections of scriptures in there once in a while. So be alert to that kind of a thing. But historical summaries on the Old Testament stuff is really pretty, usually pretty safe in there. Here we go. Starts off with the wilderness tabernacle, Moses. Then we go to Solomon's temple. Now what we have coming up is Ezekiel's temple. Not quite a temple, but it's a vision. Then you got synagogues. Then you got the Zerubbabel's temple. Then you got Herod's great temple. Then you got Christ's body, which is in John says he's the temple. Then we are the temple of God. Then we have temple in heaven. And God and the Lamb become the temple in Revelation 21. Is there something missing in that list of things I gave you? Wilderness tabernacle, the Solomon's temple, Ezekiel's temple, all the synagogues that the Jews have, Zerubbabel's temple. What a name, Zerubbabel. Herod has a temple, world, which is magnificent, I guess. Christ's body, he says he's the temple. Then when we're saved, we are the temple of God. Then there's temple in heaven, and God and Lamb become the temple. There's something missing, according to the way everybody looks at things today. And that's the church, the local church place. This place right here, that is not the temple. Never has been. And yet a lot of these guys call themselves, you know, Southern Baptist Temple, or I don't know what the names of them, Temple of the Departed or something. I don't know. There's Mormons. Yeah, the big ones. Fancy-wancy. Old Testament, Old Testament. And if somebody looks at their building in that manner, then, you know, I mean, it's nice to have a great building. And we are very spoiled here because most Bible-believing guys, unless they're mucho in debt, don't have any kind of a place like this. But we are losing our shingles. Oh, no! It's all right. It was just a place to meet. And it's a neat place. Magnifico. Nice. Clean. It's marvelous clean here, but anyway. Okay, so just a quick thing about temples. This isn't where it's at. We are where he's at. Let's go on here to some other stuff that's kind of interesting, though. Let's go on to this temple deal here. First of all, this temple that Solomon was to build, and read the details. If you haven't read it, which I'm sure you have, you know, read the details of the temple. It's quite spectacular. You think you have a lot to clean. And this was in the middle of a desert. But this place was built, so they say. We're looking at a little Jewish tradition here, and who knows. They've been around a long time, and they keep pretty good records, that sort of a thing, so whatever. But this is where the Islam say that Muhammad ascended to God in heaven, the Dome of the Rock area there. And it could be close by, it could be on, I mean, you know, kind of a thing, who knows. But this is what they claim. Muhammad ascended to God in heaven, accompanied by an angel, Gabriel, or Gabriel, whatever. There he consulted with Moses and was given Islamic prayers before coming back to earth. So that's why that's such a great place to him. Now this is where Solomon's temple was built. So this is quite the place, this rock thing. It's quite the deal. Quite a bit of history. Judaism. Well, this is where they believe that Abraham did his thing with Isaac. Right there. However, the Muslims believe, yes, he did that, but he did it with Ishmael. But it wasn't there. It was in the desert of Mina, where now they go off as a little pilgrimage every year. So there's conflict. I mean, this is why they want this place. The Muslims say it's theirs. The Jews say it's theirs. This is where they believe that Jacob dreamt about the angels going up and down to heaven. It was right there in that rock. This is the rock where the ark was placed on Solomon's temple right there. And during the second temple he got coming up later, this rock was used by a high priest who offered up incense and sprinkled the blood of the sacrifices on it. It's quite the place. The rabbis, their little legend says that the whole entire world was created from this stone. Kind of leans toward evolution a little bit there. It's called the foundation stone. So yeah, maybe we all did come from a rock. This is crazy stuff. Rabbi, it's just a rabbi legend, Jews. And then you got the Christianity, parentheses Catholic, but they don't say that when you read this stuff. This is the spot where Constantine's mother built a small church, calling it the Church of St. Cyrus and St. John, which expanded and grew into the Church of Holy Wisdom. So the Christians, the Catholics, claim that place. Yeah, I would like to go over and see all this stuff, just to see it, but you know there's a Catholic shrine or temple in every one of these spots. They just got the little fences, and if you touch here, Peter stepped here. This is Peter's footprint. I read that one day. Like, this is Peter's footprint. course, they believe that there's Mary in the pictures of the signs on the highway, too. So I guess, you know, we could try that. But anyway, there's just interesting stuff in the history of where Solomon built his marvelous, his magnificent temple. So there's stuff on the Dome of the Rock. If you haven't got a computer, if you want to read about that thing, it's quite interesting. But there's something that... Do you remember the toys, the Transformer toys? It looks like a little car, then it goes tung, 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 and you got a monster guy, whatever. Now, I'm going to give this to you. Don't you turn it over, it'll spoil the whole effect. There we go. There's yours, ma'am. And yours. And yours. I got enough, we might as well just give them out here. Keep them down, don't turn them over. Gee, I feel like I'm at Las Vegas. Here you go. Check the belt, let him see the other side. Awesome, you were looking. I saw that. You were looking. It's on the notes. Go to the sermon website and click on Sunday School Notes and click on Temple Secrets. Okay, so there's what it looks like, the basic design of this thing. Isn't that interesting? I mean, it's pretty good. Now, if I say this right, I've read tons of stuff this weekend. Can I summarize it? No. I hated book reports, too. I would say, here's a good book, read it, and you know all about it. But so if you want to look this stuff up, website is listed on the Sunday School Notes, and I have one copy right here if anybody wants it, if you haven't got a computer. But this guy, and is this really, I think, probably pretty legit kind of a deal. It's one of those things, like, whatever. But this thing has been built in such a manner that there's three people imposed on this thing. Three designs after a person. Now, turn it over to the other side, and here's what I mean. If they fit these things in their proper positions, there's what it really would look like if they superimpose three people on top of this temple the way it was designed. They just pull the one side out a little bit, and you got the towers down there, the Boaz and Jachin or Yakins or whatever. And it all just fits into place. And then it all has this purpose, which I don't have listed on here. I think you have numbers on yours. Can you see your numbers? Little bitty numbers on there? If you get on the website, you can see what each one of those things represent and how they fit. Now, the three people that are imposed onto one here is the Levitical high priest, because that's what this is. That's the design of the priest, the way he wears his clothing and da-da-da-da. And it's also a thing of Jacob, which is quite interesting to read about way back to Jacob. And then it's what he calls a metallic Messiah. And that is the fact that if you look at, let's see if I do this right here. The metals that are listed on this guy again match the Levitical priest and Christ himself in Daniel da 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 da. You've got gold at the top, silver and bronze. You remember all that stuff that you read about there? It all fits on this thing. But something he doesn't mention in here is the fact that Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel, that image that Daniel sees, also matches the same thing. And what we have with Nebuchadnezzar is we have the Antichrist identical to this thing, except the feet are clay and all that kind of stuff. So what you can get at if you're really interested in this kind of stuff, which I'm not, because I'm just like, well, that's all I want out of this thing. Get back to Paul. But is the fact that God had to tell David how to design this thing, because man is going to come up with this thing. You know, the way this thing is all written down with all these designs and the history of it, way back to Jacob. It really is kind of fascinating. I don't like the phrase metallic Messiah, but he's talking about the metals that are there, the bronze, the gold, so that's understandable. But it is interesting to me that the Antichrist has the same pattern. So you know that the devil's got a pattern, the whole thing. And there's other things in there the guy talks about here that don't know if I mark any of these things here or not. Yeah, if you get on the if you want this one copy, it lists every one of those things, how they what their spiritual application, or whatever you want to call it, would be. The porch is quite interesting. In fact, this thing is quite. It must be another word here. The physical relationship between a husband and a wife, between male and female, all that romantic. Well, what does Solomon write? The Book of Solomon. So he's really, or the Song of Solomon. So he's really into this thing. Okay, is that all I need to say? He's really into that aspect of life, and it's represented in this temple with this man. It's fascinating stuff. No man's going to come up with this kind of stuff, you know, kind of a deal. So, interesting thing. What the two Jachin or Jachins or Boaz, now that's very interesting that if you were to pronounce that, you know, Boaz is a guy and Jachin would be, you know, we don't go there. The temple is white on the outside, gold on the inside, and that matches a high priest. It's just fascinating stuff. What can I say? And then here it talks about Jacob, and it talks about how he was laying down for you know, his head is at the right place, up facing the east. It's just wild stuff. Just wild stuff. And the Antichrist steps right in and copies it exactly. Now, here's something for you, too. I got this morning. Remember I've been talking to you about MySpace.com? Where every kid in the world, and more people have a little profile, a little website for themselves that they can blog with people all over the country, that kind of a thing. And I got on there and I found some local Tushy kids that say they're Christians, and you read their stuff, it's like, oh man, I hope you guys, we'll shoot you. I mean, you got that to look up to, so. Anyway, one of the things that was there this morning was a Christian website has the Lion of Judah, you know, the lion face, you know? To show that they're a Christian, but the eye is darkened. On a lion. The lion face. That's Antichrist. And it's so blatant today. And I guess kids or parents or somebody, chances are the parents have no idea they have that web page. But, oh, you're on your computer doing crosswords. Oh, how nice. Anyway, just, and then also, I got a bunch of stuff. If you're into the Masons, Freemasonry stuff, how that is so designed around Solomon's Temple, which makes sense because when we're going to get into this thing in a second here, Solomon is so much full of wisdom. He's got so much wisdom, man's wisdom, as we're going to see here in a minute. It's God's wisdom, but it's you'll see here, and so it makes total sense in the world why they would think that they could build their club, and they would build their clubhouse. After Solomon's Temple. You know? It's amazing.
Pastor, they believe...
I have no idea.
That the temple or the Antichrist will build the temple.
Who?
Who
believes?
Doesn't he build a temple?
Or I don't know.
He builds a temple?
I've heard, I'm reading some of this stuff, that they say that some Christians believe that da-da-da-da. I mean, there's so much in the soup bowl now that,
I've heard that,
you know, yeah, we've heard that for years, that until that thing is torn down and built, when they start tearing when the big war goes on over this rock and the dome, then we can know the Lord's coming pretty soon, and something about a red cow and or a red heifer, I guess, I got to get this cow thing right, will then signify the Lord coming, and it's all fantastic stuff, but you know, I don't know. Let's just learn Paul and see if we can't be a better Christian than we were 10 minutes ago. But before we do that, let's look at the book of Ecclesiastes. This is becoming even more fascinating to me. Boy, you know, the more I get into this stuff, the more I'm learning as a pastor or as a teacher or preacher or whatever, I'm really glad that all you asked me was if I like to fish or hunt. Because if you don't know all this stuff, I'd still be teaching. I would have been fired by now. Banned, but this has been fascinating stuff. Even I enjoy reading Ecclesiastes. And we have talked about this before. Patience, you probably have the notes already. And I guess that's about it in here. Sam is just a cute little guy back in those days. We went over this stuff here in Ecclesiastes. And I think Austin was just kind of just burped right then. I don't think Liv even existed. You were just a dream. Yeah. What? Yeah. And now you're. You become a star instead of a twinkle now. See? Did I get out of that okay? Okay, if we were to take the time and read Ecclesiastes, which we will do, because we'll have to come to it in our little trek through the Old Testament, but we're going to jump ahead a little bit today because this was written by Solomon. And it's marvelous stuff, but what he, and I know you know all this stuff, but maybe somebody doesn't. He wanted to live a life without God. He just, no God. I go out there and I'm going to da-da-da-da. Now look at chapter 1. We just don't have time to read all this stuff, but I like 8. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, or the ear filled with hearing. We're never satisfied. The eyes of man, etc., etc. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun. So here we are. We learn all this history, kids, and why? He's going to do it again. Well, let's learn it so we don't do it again. Yes, Mom or Dad, but Solomon says we're going to do it again, so let's just wait and learn it the first time. Well, the world has been through some horrible history, and we're just going to go through it again. It's amazing stuff. 10, is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new? It hath been already of old time which was before us. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. You see what that says? That which is going to come, those people past that won't remember that either. So let's just learn to read so we can read our Bible. There goes history, there goes science. I mean, you know, science is in here. Oh, there's so much. Look at 13, verse 13. And I gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travaileth hath God given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. Yeah, go for it if you'd like. Kids, nice to have you been around for the last 18, 19 years. Have at it. Have a good time. By the way, before I die, will you come back and tell me I was right? Just once? You know, isn't that right? You know. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. So why get out of bed? That which is crooked cannot be made. But I tell you, this guy has got the look on life like this is really exciting. So, let's go to chapter 2. There's just way too much. Well, it did destroy him. He wasn't thinking from God at all here. Look at this is chapter 2. I mean, he got everything here. Look at verse 4. Well, 3. Well, 2. You know, he just wants everything. Verse 1, I want to enjoy something. I just want to enjoy pleasure. And he says even this is a waste of time. Well, I'll tell you what. I gave me great works in verse 4. I made me gardens and orchards. Now, I'll go along with that. You know, I planted trees of all kinds of fruit, all kinds of fruits, pools of water. I got me servants and maidens. Now, kids, don't say, I got me kind of thing. It's just, don't go. You got breakfast? I got me some cereal, Ma. Don't, you know. If you want to learn how to be, patience is writing and typing up, or has, I don't know if you're going to continue this or not. This old book, Etiquette. Page and page, a tiny little print. And this etiquette thing. You want to learn what etiquette is? Talk about lots to read. Look at verse 8. I gathered me also silver and gold. There's your money everybody has to have, and the peculiar treasure of kings under the provinces. I like this one. I get me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments. With my CD and DVD and iPod and MP3 players, everywhere he goes, he had to have it live, but he had music. So I was great, increased more than all they worked out. I mean, it was just, the mouse of my wisdom remained with me in verse 9. Oh. And we, kids, you can save yourself a ton of grief if you just read Ecclesiastes really seriously and realize what you want is probably just, it's not going to work. It just isn't going to work. Here's this guy that had absolutely everything. And went on track life without God, and it was all a waste of time. In fact, look at chapter 2, verse 16. Chapter 2, verse 16? Yes, here's what happened to this guy. He went out and tried to do everything. For there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever. Seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. Really? You guys are going to forget me that quick? Are you really? Going to forget about Lewis and Marcy and Marilyn? When Grandma dies, woo, she's gone. And that's it? All the years on that white hair is because of you guys. You know that. And Louie, and that's not here, okay? You know, John, your mom and dad are going to die someday. In a couple of years, you're going to get some pictures of mom. I kind of forgot how life was. And dad and the dog, Bowser. What's your dog's name? Bud, okay. I mean, just look at your pets you've had in the past. Do you ever still talk about them? Yes, for a bad example, more than anything, Hershey and Herman and Tiger, Oscar. Who knows the story of Oscar? Better raise your hand, I'll tell it to you. Okay, you know the story of Oscar. Tiger was flattened by a taxi cab. I've hit a taxi cab drivers ever since, you know. Tiger, whatever. You got people. You know, it's just like, you forget about this stuff after a while. And how dieth the wise man? As the fool. Therefore, here's his conclusion. I hated life. Because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me for all his vanity and vexation of spirit. There's a guy that just pretty much is miserable all day long. And we don't need to be that way. But if we put our life towards what we want, we're just going to be miserable. We're just going to be miserable. Look at chapter 12. Chapter 12, verse 10. Verse 13 and 14, I guess it is. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. He's done it all, and he says, hey, fear God and keep his commandments. You better keep in tune with God. Now, being rightly divided that you are, you know how to do that. You know what that means. You don't have to live a life of Ecclesiastes. Now, if we were to take the time, which I won't do, but it is listed on the website in detail, here are all the world's philosophies that are in Ecclesiastes. I mean, this is what they are. You got them in your notes right there? Nope, you got them somewhere. Probably forgotten by now anyway. If we go back to chapter 2, we have materialism, things. In chapters 2, verses 1 to 3, chapter 5, 9 to 11, he checks out materialism and education. He thinks that'll do it. Well, that didn't work. If you go to chapter 2, verse 3, you learn by experience. Well, that's a good teacher, but do we always learn by experience? Have you ever touched anything hot twice? Yeah, I guess we didn't learn the first time, did we? You know, or whatever. Ever loaded the shell wrong? Yeah, twice?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. Why didn't we learn the first one? We didn't blow our head off, I guess. Phenomenalism is in chapter 2, verse 10. It's how you see things. It's how you perceive it. Who cares if your mom and dad see, but it's how I see it, Mom, and I'm right. Pessimism, otherwise known as Eeyorism, is in chapter 2, verse 20, stressing the negative, gloomiest view of life. Fatalism is in chapter 2, verse 23, which means that everything is determined by fate, so what's the point? You have no choice in the matter anyway. Kids get up in the morning, they're going to have a great day. And mom says, okay, start with school. What? After about 6 years of that, what's the, you know, you just know you get up, you're going to have school. But that's exciting, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. Difference of opinion here is how you perceive it. It's phenomenalism. That's what he does. Egotism, chapter 2, verse 25, life is all about yourself. That's what most little kids are like. Adults never that way, though. Pragmatism in chapter 2, verse 26, if it works, then it must be right. You recognize a lot of things, if you look at these things, you recognize a lot of things that young people try to grab onto because they're just not going to do it the way God is not going to do it. And lots of Christians don't understand it because they haven't read their Bible. They haven't read Paul, et cetera, et cetera. Agnosticism, there's no truth, there's no God, it's just how you perceive things. Theism, belief it's all God, period, it's all God. Naturalism, it's all explainable by natural causes. That's chapter 16, verse 18. Pantheism, worship of all gods, the universe is God, deity is the universe. Paganism, no religion at all, just personal pleasure, otherwise known as hedonism. Deism, God created everything, they let it go. Communism, collective ownership, labor for the common man, and the government knows best. Boy, that sure says rings a bell, doesn't it, lately, more and more? Everybody kind of shares the pot, and the government will tell you how to put into it and get what little you can out of it. Capitalism, a free market. Make it through your own works, efforts. Rationalism, chapter 6, verse 9, reliance on reason. That can't be right about naturalism. That could be chapter 16 and 18. What is that? Check that out.
Chapter 16 of what book?
Yeah. Well, these are all in Ecclesiastes. Yeah, I know. I got to read that. Wow. Check that one out. Rationalism, reliance on reason. Reason over authority. This is what you get at the fair booth. You can speak very simply with authority, and these guys come in with years and years of experience and naturalistic and pantheistic and paganistic and fatalistic and pessimistic and phenomenalistic and agnosticism-istic and deistic and communistic and capitalistic and rationalistic, and they try to reason with us. And do they get anywhere?
Nope.
No. Do we get anywhere? Plant seeds. That's all we can do. Which is scary to me, because when somebody comes and talks to us, and you got your little kid standing there, and you don't have an answer for them, I think they have planted the seed of doubt in our kids. I heard the other day, again, more of our teens of the Bible believer crowd that doesn't believe what their parents have been teaching because they never saw it. And that's tremendously damaging to our kids. You know, anyway, skepticism, chapter 6, verse 11, doubt, stressing uncertainty. And we get that all the time at the booth, too. You can't imagine that. No, I don't think so. I doubt that. Well, this is what it says. I mean, yeah, but I can't see that. Yeah, yeah. I also call that errorism. They just oppose you because absolute knowledge is not attainable. Okay, modernism, departure from the traditional way. Just, you know, if it's different, it works. That's a kid thing compared to a parent thing again. Here's the way mom and dad have always done it. I'm going to do it differently. That's just kids. That's just the way they are. But that's a major thing of modernism. You know, America was doing fine. Let's try it this way. Well, it wasn't broken. But anyway. Existentialism. A philosophy that emphasizes the uniqueness and isolation of the individual experience in a hostile or indifferent universe. What? Regards human existence as unexplainable. That's possible with these people. Because they're kind of hard to explain. And it stresses freedom of choice and responsibility for the consequences of one's acts. In other words, you don't have to be accountable for anything. And that happens all the time today, too. Nobody's accountable for stuff they're getting away with, that kind of a thing, whatever. Just stuff. That's all. I mean, this stuff is fascinating reading. If you got nothing else to do. About the temple, the details of it, the transformation, the transformer guy into the temple into a guy, the metals that are around him matches the Antichrist, and the Antichrist matches the real Christ, which matches the Levite. The Masons, based on Solomon's wisdom, and it's all in Ecclesiastes, and all the world's there. It's a life without God. Just a life without God. And we have people today that want to live a life without God. And if they could just trust one of the 66 books, they can find out what it's going to be like. And it isn't going to work. So when you read through Ecclesiastes with your kids or whatever, just emphasize that here's the wisest guy in the world that tried this and it didn't work. It's just a waste of life. And near as we can tell, the Bible doesn't say that he went to be with the Lord. I don't think it more hints along the fact that he didn't. That is really a waste. You know. And yet he had everything. And, you know, Sheba, Queen of Sheba says, I've only seen half of it. Wow, this is amazing stuff. Anyway, there you are. That's just Solomon's temple, and the interesting, haven't even seen half of it.